The highway's jammed with broken heroes on a last chance power drive. Everybody's on the run tonight, but there's nowhere left to hide. Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Same Old Wombles. While we're about it, happy birthday to friend of the pod, big Wimbledon and Springsteen fan Paul Tudor, celebrating a significant birthday this week. And as he's a big Springsteen fan, he'll tell me off for getting at least two words wrong in that quote from Born to Run. Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, independent, and partisan. Non-partisan, indeed. Same Old Wombles.
I'm very partisan.
My name is Mark Lewis, and what, do you want me to start again?
No, you can continue. I think it'd be funny if you continue. I've been off for a couple of weeks.
Thank you. That was Niall Cooper. He's on tonight's panel along with Adam Proctor. And on tonight's show, we're going to talk about the lament at Leighton. Are the playoffs actually realistic? And Niall's going to give us a quick update relating to the government white paper that is, in fact, not going to be announced this week after all. And, of course, some numbers. Welcome to episode 24.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Lovely jubbly, Mark. It's nice to be back amongst the Same Old Wombles massive. And yeah, definitely. On the Leighton Orient thing, I didn't make it, which is unusual because it would have been a great thing. And that's largely because I am a numpty and didn't get my act together in order to buy a ticket. And by then they had sold out massively. And I would have loved to have gone, with the exception of the result. And obviously doing the classic, therefore follow on as many channels as you possibly can, as every absent Don will realise this. You follow it on other podcasts, which are all obviously very official, obviously get all their information like that. I've been away for a bit, you know, I have to store a bit of controversy. And then also on BBC and WDR on absolutely everything. All the channels going. And by all accounts, I think we sounded like we played well. But Mr. Lewis, I know that were you in the posh seats in corporate world?
I was in the corporate world as a Donsize board representative. How do I damn Orient with faint praise? They're not the poshest seats. The setup is very nice. The people were very friendly. The layout was all very nice. And then you go outside and it looks like you're on some kind of semi-building site, frankly. Anyway, decent enough for you, but I'm, as they say, I'd rather be at Plough Lane. In terms of the plushness of and the being on the halfway line as opposed to perched somewhere towards the 18-yard line. But I have to say, having read a few things online and on Twitter and so on, I think the reviews of the game, including from some of the fans that were on a boat beforehand and therefore may or may not have been relatively level-headed in terms of how much they may have drunk, are possibly slightly rose-tinted glasses. I don't think we were all that, actually. We had some good chances. We missed some good chances. But we didn't really have particular control, which is frustrating because we were playing a team that weren't actually particularly confident and the crowd were not particularly confident. You can tell that when the crowd are, you know, doing the come on Orient thing after about 10 minutes because they feel that the team aren't really inspiring them. But the longer it went without us actually putting our chances away, the more perhaps it was inevitable that something might happen and one goal was going to seal it. And unfortunately, it was their goal, not ours.
Yeah, look, I mean, from the stuff I watched on TV or whatever, TV, YouTube, it looked like that was a pretty... Their goal, unfortunately, was pretty badly defended, I thought, in general, from what I could tell. And I think a 0-0, from the highlights, looked like more a sensible thing. But they're top of the league. So, you know, I don't think it's that bad. I think it's okay. I mean, I'm glad I didn't pay for it on iFollow, to be honest, because I would have been annoyed that I wasted 10 quid or whatever. But, it looked like it looked like an exciting game from the highlights. I don't know how exciting it was to be there, but
I think it would have been more exciting on the highlights because there were a number of chances. But I mean, if you see, for example, on like a BBC text thing, it'll say, you know, Ethan Chislett shoots high and wide from 15 yards. And that doesn't tell you very much. If you actually see that for the first time we managed to part in the whole game, and the only time probably, we managed to thread three passes together, Pell flicks the ball over, Pell or Davis, nothing, and Chislett is in behind the defence. He's got no one else to beat. He's on the edge of the area. He can advance into the area, go round the goalkeeper to the left or to the right. No defender is going to get back to him. And what does he try and do? Smack it in the top corner like he's Cristiano Ronaldo. And what does he actually succeed in doing? Sticking it in row Z. Unfortunately. And that was the best chance that we had. And you could tell that they obviously took some confidence from that, as you would when you expect to go 1-0 down. And we, on your in reverse, so to speak, suddenly thought, well, hang on, if we can't finish chances like that when they were laid on a silver platter for us, then what are we going to be able to achieve? And we couldn't achieve it.
I think the thing with it is it's one of those moments where Ethan Chislett didn't do what Ethan Chislett does. And I think, yeah, it's disappointing and it's probably cost us points out of the game. Well, it has cost points out of the game. However, Ethan has been a sensation this year and he's probably been resulting for us getting a whole lot of points we wouldn't normally have got. So it is disappointing. And obviously I wasn't there and I'm aware of the miss, you know, I've seen it. But, you know, I also remember that last year when we were in League One, Ethan Chislett wasn't like the standout player anywhere near. I mean, the guy has grown a lot this last year. So I hope that for the sake of the team, that miss doesn't affect Ethan that much because the guy's been class. And it's unfortunate that is an incident that we would have expected him to do that, to score. I think last season, absolutely everybody in our team would have missed that. And the best chance would have been like, had we brought on Chris Stewart with his speed and maybe he would have scored, right? And those of you who know how fast Chris Stewart is at the moment, that's saying something, right? But like, it is just one of those. I think the fact as a fan base, we all thought Ethan was going to score, tells you an awful lot about how far we've come. Because I think last year, absolutely all of us would have thought whoever would have been through on that would have missed. And that's the difference.
That is true. No, that is true. But the best thing is, I'm sure it's on that Don's vlog or whatever, the YouTube channel. You've got to check out, because basically there's some flats in the corner of the Leighton Orient ground, which basically have balconies looking onto the pitch, even more like insane than Plough Lane, right? And there's like about 10 guys stood in the corner watching the game, and the guy at the front has got like an old school Wimbledon top on. They've all got beers and whatever. I just think, it's so funny. That's the best thing about the whole game from what I could tell.
Oh, the game's a bit better than that, to be fair. Although that did remind me, way back in something like the Conference South, we played someone like Grays Athletic and they had a similar setup somewhere in the kind of border of Essex and Kent. And Niall will tell you exactly where Grays is. And they had a cinema set up with balconies facing inside onto the pitch. And at one point, and it was a league game, it wasn't a preseason game. But at one point, the lady who lived in the flat came to sunbathe and unfortunately was treated rather in a rather sexist fashion, basically. I'll leave it at that. So she went inside again, and then the bloke in the same flat came out again and was treated entirely in a very sexist way as well. In other words, they were very happy when the lady was there and very unhappy when the man was there. Obviously, because I was sitting on the balcony with the rest of the board, I was on my best behaviour and not making any rude comments like that at all. But one other thing I would say is the crowd, because we were the opposite side from where our away following was, over 1,200 or so, I understand, as away fans, and they were immense, and you could hear them all over the place, and you could hear them consistently singing, and they seemed to be almost, because of how they were singing, the home crowd themselves felt they had to do something, which is good, and they made for a decent atmosphere.
Yeah, I have to say, our following in terms of home and away, you look at the stats, we are smashing it in terms of getting people in the ground. So I'm really impressed, you know, that I don't know if it's a, I don't know, I don't even know if the away support is a plough lane effect, but we are definitely on it now in terms of getting people to do these, especially in this league when most of the teams are miles away. We seem to be doing great, so I'm really, yeah, big shout to anyone who travels to any of these away games at the moment, because they are doing us massively proud.
You know, I think a lot of it is the ploughing effect, because I think it's brought the fans, and we always were a good community group, but I feel that people are coming to the ground earlier, there's more atmosphere at home, and that kind of makes people feel like, I want to see these guys away as well. I think that kind of brings the spirit of the fan base strong together. And that's where I see the big difference, you know. I mean, Mark, you go to more away games than me, so I'm sure you did that. Does that ring true for you?
I haven't been to too many this season, to be fair, but yes, I'd say it probably does. And what I really like and applaud all of them, don't know whether any of them listen to the pod, but what I would say is that I was at Paddington Station the day of the Newport game that got called off because I was going somewhere else for a family occasion. And there were a bunch of fans there, all of whom were somewhere between about 15 and about 22, 23. And I've seen a number of them on social media about, you know, showing the away days they're doing. And we know the people, the equivalent people who are now in their 30s who used to do that. And a number of other people, and maybe we were part of those, who are obviously a little bit older still. So there's two or three generations, and this is a young generation now, who are doing that, which is great, because they are obviously there for, and our children are a little bit perhaps too young to do that, but I can see my son, for example, in a few years' time when he's off at university, wherever that may be around the country, traveling around like we traveled around to go to whatever the different appropriate grounds are. We were lucky enough to go to, you know, Anfield and Old Trafford and so on. And Ellen, I went to Ellen Road and saw us get spanked at least once because I was at uni in Leeds. But yeah, that new generation doing it is great because they've got the chants going. Champagne Song got an airing at least once, which is quite interesting because I was sitting next to Danny Macklin at the time, but he took it in the right spirit and started blaming Ivor, at which point Ivor blamed the Don's Trust Board, at which point I just burst out laughing. So all in a good spirit in that regard. But yeah, when you are going, I don't know how many people will get to go to Newport, for example, midweek, whenever their game's been rearranged for, but fair play to all of them for making the sacrifice, obviously financially making the sacrifice as well. And the team really properly appreciate that. And hopefully, you know, we're keeping clean sheets and hopefully we can actually get the new attacking impetus with the new signings gelling together to actually get it right at the top end of the pitch, as I say.
No, I think that's a really nice positive outlook on all of it, but no 15-year-olds will be listening to a podcast, so it doesn't matter what we say, they are not going to hear us, even if we do big them up, but there we go.
My daughter listens to this, and I suppose she's 16, but you know, it's different.
Too much information. Right, I'm going to move us on swiftly, having just mentioned some of those new additions. Just to give a quick review, because when we were recording this podcast last week, we were right in the middle of whether or not in the last 24 hours of the transfer window was going to see Mr. Jack Curry whisked away, and that didn't transpire in the end, thank goodness. Who knows what might happen in the summer, but just as a quick review, and I think I've got this just about right, I thought I'd just run down what happened in the transfer window in terms of who's in, who's out, who we acquired. And you guys can tell me who you're excited about seeing. And obviously, we're all lamenting the fact that Asal is off and Asal's already scoring goals for his team over in the UAE. So obviously, we sold Asal. We released Courtney Senior from that fabulous goal, which may or may not have saved Johnny Jackson's job at the time against Harrogate.
Do you want us to comment on them as we go along?
No. I'll run through them and then you can give me your SP on the whole thing. Obviously, we released Paul Osu as well. We've brought in Ali Al Hamidi on a permanent transfer, and also Aaron Pierre to the end of the season, the oldest looking 29-year-old in football history. On loan, we've got Armani Little, already bedded into the midfield. Sam Pearson started okay and hasn't been seen since. Saiku Janet, DJ, as they call him, I believe his surname is pronounced as Joe Semi, but I'm happy to be proved wrong. And Casey McAteer, who is not Jason's son, as far as I'm aware. In terms of loans going out, we've got Frimpong out on loan. We've got Aaron Cosgrove. That's been extended to the end of the season at Kings Lynn. Alfie Bendel's down at Eastbourne Borough. Ben Mason's over at Basingstoke. Ben Mason is at Basingstoke Town. And the young goalkeeper, Max Folkes, is at out on loan in non-league as well. I believe that's about it. I probably missed someone totally fundamental. Feel free to correct me, gentlemen.
We obviously had loads of people go back on loan. So the loans.
Oh, yeah, ended. There was that as well. Yeah.
So that was, they were quite significant. Losing Towler was huge. A Sue, I'm a bit sad about. Quite like to Sue. But we've got 1,000 people that play in his position, so I can understand that. Courtney Senior, Hammer Bothered, not really. And then on all the people out on loan, I think all these sort of people should go out on loan. I probably would have liked, I know Bendel, I know a lot of people talk great about Bendel. I don't know whether he needs more time somewhere else. That probably makes sense to some degree. On the ones coming in, right. Now, this is because I've read loads of people and loads of people tell me other stuff because being like in the kind of fair game circle, you get a lot of people tell me about all these players when they're doing it. So which means I've got to talk about Jack Curry. Very important. You've got to talk about Jack Curry, right? Bristol City are a club that are on the verge of joining fair game and have been for a long time. And I do have these kind of briefing sessions with Bristol City, and their chief executive was a gloating little so-and-so. When I was talking to him, because he said, yeah, we're after one of yours. And he wouldn't tell me. It was like blatantly bloody obvious it was, right? So there's me and the supporters trust. We're all in this big group call. And he's going, yeah, we're going to get one of yours. We've got one coming in. We've got all this sort of stuff. And like all with their supporters trust heads and all that sort of stuff. So the entire week they were on the phone going, yeah, we're going to get him. We're going to get him and all this sort of stuff, gloating and all the rest of it. And I'm like, please don't sell. Please don't sell. So the moment transfer window is shut and Jack Curry is still a Don, the gloatingness went the other way and I was deliriously happy. But their chief exec was like a bit grumpy because they thought they had Jack Curry in the bag. They thought, who is not going to sell one of their players to a championship club? So big up us for not selling Jack Curry. I think it would have been the wrong move. I think he will go at some point, but now we need to keep him. So that for me was a big win, massive win. I like the looks of Little. I've heard some really good things about DJ. Pearson is definitely one to on the kind of maybe front, massively. Now, Perry's an interesting one. Sutton fans don't necessarily rate him because he's been a bit like, God, what's that? Who's that? Anderton. Do you remember Anderton? Like Sick Note, right? So he's a bit like Sick Note for them. But before that, Perry was considered to be a legend at other clubs. And I've had a couple of their old clubs going like, you've got a real good deal with Perry. And I'm like, we've got him from Sutton United. He was an injury prone person. He's done nothing. But before that, Perry was really, really highly rated. So I think that's might turn out to be a good signing. So that Little, DJ, are probably the ones that I'm most interested in. And people say Janet will score lots of goals at some point, but again, not sure. So I think it's not overall the loss for Sal is what kind of tips it. You know, the rest of it, I think all the other players that we've lost are I'm not that bothered about compared to all the players we've got coming in. Towler was a loss as well, but like, you know, I think we've got some good people. I think the balance is we're probably about par overall, which is not bad.
Just putting out there right now that three times in a row in the last minute and a half, Niall has managed to twin Aaron Pierre, spelled P-I-E-R-R-E, with Chris Perry, well-known rash of the centre-back, erstwhile Wimbledon
Perry. Player. Perry, whatever.
Pierre, my friend, Pierre. Don't you ever speak any little French lingo in your house?
Yeah, that was GCSE last year. It's done and dusted now. All that's left in my house is German and Latin. And Latin is about as useful. They don't have any accents in Latin. It's easy.
Put him right, Adam.
They don't have any accents. Adam, right. Do you know how people like actually spoke Latin? How do they pronounce their Latin words? Nobody knows because the language died out several thousand years ago. Like, what was the Latin like pronunciation in Rome 2000 years ago? Nobody knows. It's just like Pierre and Perry. Same difference. I'm just ahead of my time, Mark.
I'm not saying anything, honestly. I have some very strict rules on what GCSEs should do. But anyway, and Latin doesn't feature. I don't watch loads of other football. I don't know what these other guys are like, right? From what I've seen so far, they look like they're slotting in. I think we've managed to at least mitigate against a disaster in the transfer window. That we've a few players have gone who are probably at higher leagues than us, etc., or other leagues than us. And we've got a bunch of players in that will kind of cover those bases. I'm just waiting to see how they kind of pan out in terms of their team play and the stuff they do. That for me is going to be where I figure it out. Sue going is like, yeah, that is disappointing because he seemed like a really nice guy. But, you know, players come and go. So I'm kind of just waiting to see how it functions as a squad. That for me, what I'm happy about is that we seem to have kind of swapped what we've got for other players that are going to fill similar roles, so we're not in a really bad position, whereas previously at other transfer windows we've been absolutely kind of decimated to some degree. So for me it's like we keep the same sort of strength, we can, you know, they've got to fit into the squad, they've got to get to know each other, etc. That obviously takes a little bit of time. But hopefully it's a bit more of a straight swap. So I'm kind of happy with where we are.
Two interesting things about the squad being replenished, so to speak. There's a bit of reverse engineering among some fans, I think, on social media. Everyone agrees that Towler disappearing and ending up at Pompey is a loss. But there's also been a bit of, well, actually, you know what? I'm not sure that Paris bloke was all that, really. And actually, you know what? People were quite rude about Hudden while he was here, let alone since he's left. And actually, you know what? NYC never got fit either. So that's a little bit hypocritical in some counts, as far as I can see. However, what we have done is we haven't, as I requested Danny Macklin, and I know that he's not concerned and not engaged with the recruitment overall, but I did request to not buy somebody from Cultural Reserves at 11:59. So we bought three players at 11:59 instead. So someone wasn't listening to me. But I find it fascinating. It's inevitable we were going to get some Charlton players. And we ended up with Gunter, who didn't play at all for Jackson last year while he was Charlton boss, who we may see quite a lot more of now, as it looks like, unfortunately, Adam's mate, Haspiller, it looks like he's... sustained a serious hamstring injury. I really hope he hasn't, but that's what it looked like when he went down, because there was no one anywhere near him when he went down injured at Orion. So that's Gunter getting a chance possibly in the team now. And of course, you've got Jaisemi, who looked mobile. He looked like he could play left and right. He's decent in the air. He's not going to be someone you can shrug off, and he's quick. And that combination at League Two level is relatively unheard of, frankly, because Janet's quick as well, but he looks like, frankly, someone like Adi Aziz would be able to give him a run for his money. And we know that Aziz is now playing somewhere in the deepest, darkest depths of non-league. Bless his cotton socks. I mean, we had a bizarre scenario the last 10 minutes or so of the game on Saturday where they either went to 4-2-4 and played four up front, or certainly we were majorly pushing forward, looking for an equaliser. But the formation they had, when their front players were Davison, Chislett, Janet, and Jaisemi, and they ended up with Jaisemi playing wide left, and he had one played off the line, Janet playing wide right, and Chislett playing through the middle, behind Davison. And even Chislett was looking around like, what am I supposed to be doing? This is all a bit bizarre. All a bit peculiar, frankly. But you know, missed opportunity. But hopefully, as I say, given that the manager really likes Jai Semi, you imagine otherwise he wouldn't have brought him in, then that's a positive step. And we've got options now. We've actually can bring people off the bench. He as good as admitted it in the interview, Jackson, at the end of the transfer window, that he wasn't confident bringing on the likes of Ogundire and Fisher and Bartley, for example, which is why we often ended up making one substitution. But I mean, Orient, for example, brought on five subs, actually. And that really helped them see the game out.
No, I think that's where we have strengthened. And it's, you know, we're talking a bit about whether we can get into the playoffs and do that. You know, I don't think we're a million miles off. I think our problem probably was that crappy spell before, you know, that led up to the Sutton game. And had we not had that, you know, picked up a few more points during that bit, then I feel that little bit more confident. It's, you know, I feel there is a bit of solidity about the team. You know, we're in a situation where the team seems like we know how to defend. We're not really conceding very much. And we just need to have that little bit more creativity. And if one of those players, new players, can come in and it's that classic, if you can break the line, then I think we'll start on getting people that can do that. Then I think we can really be a force to get into the playoffs. We're not a million miles away. You know, if we were to string three wins on a bounce, we'd probably be in the playoffs. That's how close it is. And that's I do see there's definite progress there, definite opportunities. You know, and you know, remember when we got into the playoffs and won it last time? That was all about momentum at the end of the season. And I think we could potentially get on a run like that. I don't think it's beyond us now, which is very positive. We're about to say that.
No, that is true. That is true. I think I feel we're in a position to have a good end to the season, which is great. Where we end up is, you know, I think we're safe. So where we end up will be an exciting end to the season, I think. So,
I mean, everything's in our hands. Looking at the fixture list, we've got to play at home Carlisle, Stevenage, Mansfield, Salford, Swindon and Walsall, all of whom will think or will be in or around there in playoff mix. And there's obviously a number of away games as well. But we've got to play them generally Saturday, Tuesday through the whole of February and March. And I'll put my flag in the sand now and state that I think Stevenage will overhaul Orient. I was not impressed by Orient at all. And unfortunately, the fact we have to play Steve Evans twice and his wonderful way of playing and his glorious Stevenage bandwagon, and unfortunately, he is a bit of a bandwagon at the moment, then that's going to be tough. If we get anything out of those games, I think we're doing pretty well. But we've just played three games in a row against contenders, Stockport, Bradford and Orient, and we end up with a win, a defeat and a draw, which sums up our whole season, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're also talking that's against contenders. So if you're getting an average of 1.5 points or whatever it is amongst those teams that are above us, and you're picking up all your wins below you, that's enough to get you in the playoffs.
I'm still sticking with my finishing ninth and being just outside, but actually having given it a run. I made that prediction before balls kicked, not based on anything but in particular, when no one had heard of Paris McGain or Riley Taylor. But I think I won't be far off.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, we'll see. I don't, you know, I'm football gods. Can't predict. It'd be really bad. Always have been. Like that. I don't want to, you know, I think we'll have a nice end to the season. That's all I'm going to say.
Nice to see we're prepared to stick our neck out there. Okay, so we'll move on. And talking of things you can't necessarily predict, there's been lots of talk in and around the media over the last couple of months. And Niall obviously will know far more about this because he's been involved in some of it, about the potential of the government stepping in and actually specifically putting in a white paper, which would then lead to legislation with regards to what can or cannot be done to level the playing field, so to speak, on the financial football map within this country. There was due to be an announcement later this week, which I understand has been delayed. But as Niall's obviously been involved in it, and obviously we as AFC Wimbledon, I believe, we're going to be the hosts of the announcement, then hand over to Niall to try and eloquently and succinctly explain what's going on.
Oh, thank you, Mark. I imagine you guys should probably throw loads of questions at me during this if I kind of drift off in any kind of direction. Look, firstly, football needs a regulator. We need some change. And the reason for it, and obviously I've been right at the centre of this with Fair Game. I spend a lot of my time at the moment in Parliament. So I've been talking to politicians of all colours. I'm meeting the London Tories in a couple of weeks, meeting Welsh Labour MPs. I'm meeting all the Liberal Democrats. So you know, all of those all happening in the next couple of weeks as being big things. I have had a couple of really nice chats with Tracy Crouch, who's the one who did the panel review. All of this is about really trying to give the clubs at the lower end of the football pyramid a voice, which they haven't had. And I need to explain why they haven't had it and why what we're doing at Fair Game is so important to AFC Wimbledon. So the Premier League obviously don't want any change because they make a lot of money. And the Premier League are a fantastic body for looking after the Premier League. So they're not interested in us. They're not really bothered about us. Then the EFL will claim to be bothered about us, but the voting structure of the EFL means that the majority vote goes to the clubs in the Championship. They get 50% of the vote and the less goes to League One and League Two. The way the Articles of Association, so those of you who know businesses, these are the kind of like your constitution, if you like. The Articles of Association, the EFL, stipulate that any revenue given to it through broadcasting from the Premier League has to be split 80%, that's 80%, to the Championship, 12 to League One and 8 to League Two. So it doesn't take a genius to realise there's massive disparity with what we get as opposed to the Championship clubs. And if you look at parachute payments, when the Premier League talk about the amount of money they give to the EFL and it comes up with some big figure, actually 70% of the money they give to the EFL goes to clubs who receive parachute payments. So we get a tiny fraction of what TV revenue gets. So that is clearly of no benefit to the pyramid. So the actual financial flow in football is, and there's another F you can put in to explain that one, and I'll let our listeners add that F in for them. A failure is the word I'm looking for. Anyway, so there is a real need for it to change. And what we're expecting from the white paper is a lot of the stuff around the edges that's good. So proper, clear governance, which doesn't exist at the moment. So there's no kind of transparency in football, no kind of agreed transparency. You can get an owners and directors test that isn't fit or proper. So people talk about, yeah, there's this rule and there's that rule in the owners and directors test. Let me tell you about the owners and directors test and how it applied to Grimsby Town. Grimsby Town have got a new owner that came in over the summer. The owners and directors test for Grimsby Town involved them getting a phone call from the EFL that said, well, I mean, I'm not even sure if it's in the EFL. Do you have an English bank account? Answer, yes. End of owner and directors test. That was it, right? So there is no scrutiny about how you can get, you know, passing an owners and directors test. It's complete rubbish. So that needs a massive overhaul. Then there's a whole issue about protecting the heritage of football. I'll let Mark jump in with a question before I go into a whole load of more other stuff. But Mark.
My simple question, just from a layman's point of view, because yeah, I'm an engaged industry football fan, but in this regard, we've got, in terms of legislation, I'm a total layman. The Premier League and the Football League are independent organisations. Yes. How can the government, which legislates about what goes on in the country, put together a white paper which is outlining what legislation they're going to bring in? How can they bring in legislation which then forces an independent organisation to act in a certain way or not act in a certain way? How does that work?
Ofcom, Ofgem, off everything. You know, there's so many different regulators that exist out there. The banking sector, massively regulated. So there's so many examples of it. Kieran McGuire comes out with this brilliant thing, and they talk about, you know, regulation. And so, does it need regulating? And say, well, like, you know, well, it's like saying, do we need the police? You know, we can, they can all regulate themselves, don't have any police, crime will disappear because you don't need the police. It's that same sort of level of regulation, same sort of level of looking after and controlling it. At the moment, you've got owners that can be completely reckless and they can do what they want. This is a sport that needs regulation. Also, then, if you then look at the kind of monopoly that exists in the Premier League, that needs an oversight that doesn't happen at the moment in terms of the financial flow and how it should be redistributed. What we're calling for at Fair Game is something called a sustainability index, which means you reward well-run clubs. One of the arguments about giving more money to the lower leagues is that we'll just waste it away, because there's a whole history of clubs wasting it away. So instead of just throwing money away, we're saying give it to the clubs that have got good governance, the good financial sustainability, because that doesn't exist either. Remember that. That you've got a situation in the Championship where the norm is to spend around 120% of your revenue on players' wages. That is not sustainable. And that basically encourages every other team to do exactly the same to compete, which means the only way they survive is either clocking up massive debts and hoping they get their 1 year in the Premier League so they can survive, or they are massively dependent on an owner benefactor. And when that owner benefactor goes, that club folds or tumbles down the leagues. That is not financially sustainable. The old CEO of Cambridge United used to say to me, there are two organizations that budget for a loss in there, and that is startups and football clubs. And he said, Cambridge United are a 129-year-old startup. And I love that quote because it just says how messed up football is. That is just not the way it's going. And the way I think why it's so critical is because in 2020, 62% of clubs below the Premier League were technically insolvent. Since then, we've had the pandemic and we're now in the cost of living crisis. We will lose clubs in the next few months. You know, football is at a really, really dangerous place. You know, it's not stable. We are not encouraging clubs to behave well, because the only way you're going to compete is by overspending, because that's the whole way that we've got a gambling culture that means we are at the risk of losing history and traditions. We're lucky because we are fan owned and we've got that little bit of protection. But other clubs that aren't are just at risk of going, because that owner will be under such financial stress for all other reasons that they will go, and that could be the end of it. Mark?
I've got absolutely nothing against any kind of foreign owners whatsoever, but it does occur to me, even right down to League Two, recently Gillingham was taken over by an American owner. And obviously the financial map of football changed with Murdoch coming in, with the Sky, New Dawn of Football, whatever that was, 1992, with Vinny as captain and all those billboards. So that's 30 years plus ago. And if you listen to, you know, Talk Sport and the BBC, you'd be forgiven for thinking that football didn't exist before that time. But the reality is, I don't know exactly. You probably have the figures at your fingertips. So many, the ownership of so many of the top two divisions, let alone even more, has changed over that 30-year period. And it's changed to be bought up by a Fenway group or the Thai group that own Leicester. And this isn't aimed at one particular club or another one. But these people are doing it for certain financial models. The people that own Watford also own, I think, Malaga or Granada in Spain, and they also own Udinese. So that multi-club model is a similar thing as well. I think Brentford are doing a similar scenario. So all of that means that actually those owners themselves who've come into it believing they can earn the big riches from the top divisions, are they essentially then... Well, they're not going to vote on these things, because they're not going to be allowed to vote on these things. If there's an independent regulator, the independent regulator is going to tell them what to do. Is that the way it's going to work?
What you'll have is you have a licensing system. So you have a licensing system where there's certain criteria that you need to do to get a football license. And that does include enshrining things like location of a football club, useful for us. Will mean enshrining club colours, name of the football club. All of that sort of stuff will be enshrined in the license. So you won't be able to change that. that's what will happen with an independent regulator. Every owner will have to submit business plans, 6 months business plans that will be scrutinized. You will have to go through a much more rigorous test about whether you're actually able to run a football club. You'll have to have the proper qualifications to hold positions within a football club. So you wouldn't be able to be a person who's been bankrupt, to be a classic example, wouldn't be allowed to be a director. And that's kind of known, but needs to be enforced more. So there's a lot of things like that that we will see come in. But it's those protections, those crown jewels, as we call it, a fair game, that will never be able to be changed. So, you know, what happened to us would never be allowed to happen again. Cardiff City would never be able to play in red. Hull City would never be able to be called the Hull City Tigers unless 75% or more of the fans voted for it to be allowed to happen. That is a big change which would happen with an independent regulator. Fantastic move. Totally the right thing to be happening. Equally, things like equality standards would have to be more rigorously taken account of, and that needs to come into the regulator. But the big thing is that financial sustainability, you know, it's huge.
So obviously you've used my favourite word, enshrine, numerous times in that last sentence, which is fantastic. So I guess my question, though, is like, we've had regulators, you mentioned Ofgem, Ofcom, all that kind of stuff, but they haven't really regulated in lots of ways. So how is a regulator of football actually going to have some authority to regulate? Because this all sounds generally good, positive, etc. But how is a regulator actually going to regulate? Because all the regulators I know of haven't really regulated. I mean, look at our bills, etc. Look at the, you know, it's all been about monopolies. So how is this going to be different?
I think there are two things you need to take on that. One is the football authorities have been pretty rubbish at this for 60 years. So any movement away from their way of acting is an improvement. So that's one thing. So it's like, you know, it's going to be better because, frankly, it can be much worse. That's one thing to say. The second thing is, and this is where fair game and organisations like us really come into a bit, is that you don't just go for a regulator, you go for the best regulator. You look at what is the best example. What we've been doing an awful lot of work on is to identify exactly the best way to do it, what the best examples are. Don't look at it, don't keep it just being assumed that this is going to be something settled within the football authorities' way of being or the football world. Let's go and find the people that do it best in Ofcom or the people who do it best in Ofgem. Let's take all of these really good examples and take it. One of the things that has been really noticeable of the best regulators, they're the ones who incentivize good behavior. So if you throw penalties, which is basically what the existing we have now, which is that you throw a few fines or you dock points a little bit. Dock points is probably a little bit more effective. Throwing a penalty at Manchester City or Newcastle United will mean nothing. They're run by a government. You know, what is the difference? Well, how much is it going to change them? They're just going to go, oh, we'll cover that. You're not going to say, right, stop being the government of Saudi or UAE and stop giving money to them. They've got a bottomless pit. It's like there is no way that's going to hold them to account. Instead, if you start saying to other clubs that actually, if you do this and you behave this way, you will get money. You will look at redistributing your football finances and your TV revenues by being well run. Every bit of information that we've had, and including from the DCMS and including from those other kind of legislators, is you get culture change overnight. Because people start thinking it's worth it. It's like giving your kid 15 quid for doing something good. They're much more likely than if you are to slap them. You know, I mean, like, the frankly, you know, you watch it, they're actually, not that I advocate that at all, but like, do you know what I mean? It's that kind of penalty. Reward actually changes culture. You know, praise changes culture. Penalties just gets people being vindictive and looking for the way to wriggle out of it and get away with it, or like just to go and create Premier League 2 or whatever, or create the European Super League. That's what it's about. If you incentivize people to behave well, you will see culture change. That's what we've heard from numerous different authorities and from the DCMS and from looking overseas. That's what we need to look towards doing. And I think when you look at how AFC Wimbledon are as a club and how we're set up, it would really benefit us because we are actually a well-run club. You know, we do live within our means. We do try and do things right. And that is actually the role model that we should be looking for everybody else to take on board.
So actually what we're saying is a lot of other clubs may have to change fundamentally what they're doing day to day and how they run, how they're set up and who they're actually have got in senior management positions, but we probably wouldn't, which therefore creates far less upheaval from our perspective.
True. Basically, we're saying is that football needs to be run the right way. And at the moment, it isn't. And you can see that by all those stats I mentioned earlier on about, you know, since the turn of the century, a third of clubs have gone into administration. And when you talk about administration, they might not have gone bust, but I can tell you that the local plumber, the local tradesman who was dependent on that club that got nothing when that club went into administration, they all went bust. You know, going to administration isn't this kind of like harmless thing that happens. It's devastating to so many people around that. So we can't have football operating in that way continually. It's just not sustainable. And the model isn't sustainable. It needs to be run well. And we need to encourage and incentivize clubs to behave like it. There are good owners out there. There are good clubs out there that do it. Those are the ones who should be getting rewarded for good behavior. We shouldn't be allowing the clubs that are rewarding bad behavior, or in the case of parachute payments, let's be honest, rewarding failure.
Very true indeed. This is the wonderful eclectic nature of being a woman football fan, that last week we were talking to Bob Walsh about where he was and the fact he was getting out of prison when AFC Wimbledon first started. And here we are a week later listening to the BBC Radio 4 Today programme version of the Niall Cooper media spiel that he's no doubt repeated on lots of outlets, including BBC Radio 4 and I'm sure 5 Live over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 days. So just to finally wrap this one up, Niall, there was supposed to be an announcement this week, but that's not happening. When is it going to be announced then?
We're expecting it to be 2 weeks from now. But I've had that said to me many, 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 many times. So my hope is it is 2 weeks from now. It is written. It is drafted. I know all about. I know the people that have been involved in that. So we're quite confident it will see the light of day. If there's any more delays, I can tell you fair game, we'll not be resting. We will do everything we can to make sure that there is legislation set out by the autumn, which is when it would be. Anyway, we will do everything we can, irrespective of whether government move on this white paper or not.
And that's far too many played for fair game in the whole of this programme today.
So tonight's fair game, play organisation.
Tonight's episode of Samuel Wombles is not sponsored by fair game.
Yeah, we've not got any money.
Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to wrap it up there. Very interesting, slightly different slant of the conversation overall and slightly less raucous laughter than there is otherwise. But come back, Matt Cooper, all is forgiven. So we've just got a couple of same old numbers to finish off with. Just two numbers this week. Niall's number is number 3. And this is straightforward relating to AFC Wimbledon this season. Nothing else.
Number 3. Is it the amount of left backs we've had?
Sure, we've got more than that.
I'm normally good at these.
Yeah, right.
You've go on, Mark. What is it? Adam, have a guess. Adam never gets these, so I don't know. That's cruel.
Why would I even know? Like, I'm more worried about what number I'm going to get. 3.
With the various movements in and out of the squad now in the after transfer window, 3 is the number of players still left in the team, in the squad, that have actually scored more than 3 goals this season.
How are you ever going to know that?
Because you said it's realistic to get playoffs. And I'm telling you that we've got Harry Pell, we've got Josh Davison, and we've got Ethan Chislett, and no one else has scored more than 1 or 2 goals.
I'm just saying, right, Mark, if you went round our home stand, right, and asked that question to all of them, no one No one would have got that. That is just the most ridiculous question ever. Anyway, go on. Ask
They're
Adam
more interested in how they can get beer and can they get in and out of beer at half time.
Right. Anyway, Adam.
Adam Potter knows how to do that. Adam's number's number 9.
Now, just given how easy 3 was, 9 must be a dot or Adam.
Okay, here's a clue for you. We reckon, or at least Niall reckons anyway, because I'm putting him on the spot, that we stand a realistic chance of getting in the playoffs. To get in the playoffs, you need to win games. We are currently not in the playoff zone because we haven't won that many games.
Okay, so based on that nonsense, and I'm still going to get it wrong, I'm assuming that if we win 9 games till the end of the season, we would be guaranteed a playoff position.
You overthink things all the time.
Oh, for goodness sake, what the heck?
It's freezing. We've drawn 9 games. And most of those we probably deserve to draw, but if you turn 2 or 3 of those draws into wins, then the picture looks rather different.
Okay, so far we've drawn 9 games.
That's
the
it, that's
season.
All it was. We've drawn 9 games.
We've lost 9 as well. We've lost 9 as well, Mark.
There you go.
So had we managed to turn any of those into anything other than defeats or draws?
No, but the worst thing about that is I had two answers which would have been correct. either of them.
Any of them. Quite fantastic. Well done, gentlemen. Thank you to Niall. Thank you to Adam.
Thank you, Mark.
Same old Wombles. Yes, Niall.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Never a chore. Next week's is our Silver Jubilee 25th anniversary. So if there's anything else that you think we should feature that we haven't featured in the first 24 episodes, or anyone else that wants to come on as a guest, we're more than welcome to take in all comers. Check us out on Twitter and any other places you're going to find your general feeds and podcasts. We're back. Episodes released usually every Tuesday morning. And that has been episode 24 of the Same Old Wombles. Thank you very much and good night.